Live from the campus of Brooklyn College, it is Geek Speak with Ian Levenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Levenstein.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org, and of course, episode 8 of the Geek Speak podcast. Now, I've got some huge news here for this week's episode of Geek Speak. This will pretty much be the last episode of Geek Speak that I will be doing at geekspeak.typepad.com, as I have just found myself a much better space to do all that webcasting with. Oh yeah, you know you love it. Well, yeah, the podcasting was going great, and things were going nice and smooth until I checked my nice little bandwidth the other day on TypePad. I say little because they don't really offer too much bandwidth, and I mean, it's a nice place to start out when you're first beginning your podcast, but once you outgrow it, well, then you're kind of left behind. Now, I've used up 36% of my bandwidth already this month, and it's been 6 days or 7 days since the beginning of my new billing period over at TypePad. And right now, it has me at going 116% bandwidth tonight. Now, for those of you who don't realize, yeah, 100 is kind of the limit. So if I go to 116, I have to pay a lot more money. So I found myself a solution. And that solution is in what I've been hoping to do for a while now, and now I am finally doing. Yeah, that's right. GeekSpeak has its own webpage, finally, thanks to the help of Blogger and, of course, ZZ Hosting, which is my brand new hosting company. And I got the domain from Yahoo. Yeah, Yahoo, really, really good domain pricing these days. $2.99 for a year with Yahoo. Not too shabby at all. So I was able to register speakgeekspeak.com. That's it. www.speakgeekspeak.com. That will be the brand new home of GeekSpeak once this episode is out of the way. Now, of course, you're asking, so what else is this going to come with? Well, GeekSpeak is going to have itself a forums. Oh, yeah. That's all part of the deal. ZZ Hosting provides a nice script for a nice little forums over there. So I got my forums ready to go. It's going to be set up in the next couple of days. Working out some technical difficulties with that so far. And other than that, things are going pretty well. So once again, you'll be able to find GeekSpeak as of the end of this episode. I'm going to switch the feed over once episode 8 is released. So you'll be able to download episode 8. And then sometime next week, I'll be switching over the feed to the brand new website. So you're not going to have to re-register or anything like that. I'm just going to switch the feed burner feed to the brand new XML. So everything should be nice and smooth. And if there are any problems, just make sure to send me over an email at speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. And I'll work on that as soon as possible, ASAP. So, yeah, that's what's happening with the show. Now, what's happening in the world of geek? Not too many happy things. This is pretty much going to be a copyright-based episode. Now, I'm not copywriting the episode. Well, I sort of am, but not really. I'm going to be talking mostly about the rootkit that has been found in Sony CDs. Now, that has been a huge problem and a huge scenario that every geek has been freaking out over in the past week, and I obviously have to touch on that. Now, I'm also going to be touching on Sony's response to the rootkit being found, and you would think they'd be a little more nervous, honestly, because they could very well get in deep trouble with this. They could get sued over this, but they're taking it much smoother than anybody would have thought, especially me. So we're going to get into that. Also on the side of copyright, we're going to talk about issues with the Xbox 360, how it is not going to support a specific kind of music. What music? Well, you'll just have to listen to find out. And also, the PlayStation 3 might not let you use your used games, which is really interesting right there. And we're definitely going to have to get into that. And also an update on a previous story here on GeekSpeak. Remember that Legend of Zelda card that I was talking about? Well, new developments on that, and they're not too good. So I'll have to get into that. But obviously, I will start things off with the top story of the week, and possibly for a long time from now as well. Sony has been caught red-handed. Absolutely red-handed here. Now, what are they going to do? Well, they haven't really done too much so far. Now, here's the big story. So Sony, being the lovely company that they are, hence my sarcasm. Yeah, I've said things about Sony in the past. Actually, I've said things about a lot of companies here. I'm making enemies really fast. But Sony placed a rootkit into software, which you have to install on certain DRM-encoded CDs. Now, for those of you who do not know what DRM is, it is a type of lock on songs that only allow you to play it in certain scenarios. Like, for instance, in your Windows Media Player. It's usually what it's used. It's usually on WMA files, and it is on actual CDs as well. It stops you from ripping that CD onto your computer and then onto your iPod. That's what DRM encoding does. Now, there are ways to get around DRM encoding. I mentioned one last week. If you have a software called the WMA to MP3 recorder, you'll be able to record WMAs into MP3s. And that's a nice little walk around there. But with specific CDs, if you want to play some CDs on your computer, you actually have to download a special software that comes with the CD to play this CD in your computer. It's a special little, sort of like Windows Media Player, just a special little CD player, and nobody really thought anything of it. Now, you can avoid this downloading by just having your auto start off on your CD player. And that's one of the first things I did when I bought my computer, because I don't like it when a CD automatically starts up and doesn't give me any sort of warning, because there are often times when I don't want a CD to start right away. And that's what leads to programs like this getting installed on your computer without you knowing it. So those of you listening out there who have not done it yet, please turn auto load off on your CD player, okay? It's not too hard to click on the CD icon and start it manually, honestly, folks. Okay, so just remember that. But anyway, whenever these CDs would start, and whenever the software would install itself, it would also install this little registry location into your registry with a $sys$ included there. And this would basically hide a program that was sending all your information on what tracks you were playing on your CD back to Sony headquarters. And that, my friends, is a rootkit. A rootkit is any software maliciously installed that hides itself from anything. It won't show up in the task manager, and it won't show up in any way, shape, or form on your computer. You'll never know it's running, but it will be. And it can work with spyware, and it can work with companies like Sony, and that's exactly what Sony was using it for, to keep tabs on you, to find out what tracks you were listening to on their CDs. Now, you might think that's not too bad, but what if they were also sending back information on other things? What if they were also sending back information on what songs you were playing, period, on your computer? I mean, what if they knew whether you were playing copyrighted material or whether you were playing your bootlegs? Now, you wouldn't be too happy about that now, would you? And that's the sort of thing that these rootkits can do. They make it so that the companies have way too much control over you. Much more than you would ever want them to have. So immediately, the company that was working with Sony came out with a removal tool to take this off of everybody's computers. Now, do I trust it? Not really. Now, luckily, I was not one of the people who ended up with one of these rootkits on their computer. I ran the software, nothing was there, and everything's nice and safe. Again, that's also because I do not auto-run my CDs, so I avoided the problem. But there are plenty of people out there that do auto-run their CDs and will end up with a problem here. Now, are you actually able to trust a company that makes malicious rootkits like this? That's a good question. I mean, these are the guys who decided, oh, hey, why not? You know, there's nothing wrong with this. Hey, sure, we'll help Sony out. Yeah, sure, keep a track on their customers. Why not? And they went out and they did it. Not really too respectful of them now, is it? Now, everybody likes privacy. It's what this country thinks is one of its most important aspects. We don't like it when other people get into our business when we don't want them to. Rootkits do just that. They tell the company or the head of the spyware, basically, what we're doing and when we're doing it. That's just not cool. It's something that has to be avoided, and it's something that should be outlawed as soon as possible, in my opinion. And Sony's getting slack for it. Sony has, there have already been lawsuits filed against Sony for the unauthorized installation of these rootkits on people's computers. Microsoft is even saying that they are, quote unquote, concerned by Sony's DRM. The Redmond, Washington software maker said that the security of its customers' information is a top priority and that the company is concerned by software like it deployed by Sony to block illegal CD copying. Now, this is from eWeek.com and also from Dig.com. Once again, thank you, Dig, for being so awesome, giving me the information on this. And also, Wheel Report talked about this week on Security Now with Steve Gibson. And I would highly recommend going to twit.tv and downloading this episode of Security Now, because they get in-depth on what you can do to avoid rootkits, programs like Rootkit Revealer, which I'll link to in the show notes, and other programs out there will be able to reveal what rootkits are running on your programs, running on your computer, that is. It'll at least let you know what's not being detected, which is certainly a nice addition there, because you never want to be caught with your pants down like this. And Sony pulled down our pants here, folks. No, it's not too nice a metaphor there, but what are you going to do? Now, Sony's response to this, and I mean the nerve of them, honestly, the nerve of them to respond the way they did. When people ask them, so what do you think about this? Their response, hey, you know, what people don't know doesn't hurt them. We don't see a problem with this. I mean, people didn't get upset about it until they found out about it. I mean, why should they worry? Are you serious? If that's the way you're actually responding to something like this being found out, you're just not right in the head. Sony's not right in the head, period. If somebody doesn't know something's happening, that makes it okay? What if the government was illegally wiretapping your phones? Okay? And they heard every single conversation that you had with your friends, your family, and all that. And they had all of these on file. Wouldn't you be a bit upset? Oh, yeah. And what if the government then went out and said, hey, you know, I mean, they didn't know it was happening. Didn't hurt them until they found out. What sort of line of reasoning is this? It's outlandish. It is absolutely absurd, folks. And absurdity seems to be what the Sony Corporation is dealing in right now. I mean, first it was the situation about the PS3 not being completely backwards compatible. Then it was the PSP, them losing control on their copyright protection, pretty much. You know, modding is officially legal now in Australia, which I think is a great move, but I'm sure Sony doesn't think too much of that, and I'm sure plenty of other companies like Microsoft don't like it too much, but modding is officially legal in Australia. Is this step one? Who knows? But Sony's losing a fighting, is losing a battle here. They are just losing the war. They don't even realize it yet, but they're losing the war. And they're losing customers in the process. I mean, I love my Sony Walkman, and I've made comments about it in the past, but honestly, and this is a sad thing for me to say, if this Walkman breaks, I might be switching over to the iPod side of things. I don't know if I can actually respect a company that puts these type of things on your computer without telling you. It's outlandish, it's absurd, and it's unnecessary. And I, for one, will not stand for it. And I hope everybody out there feels the same way. All you geeks out there got to rally against Sony and let them know just how you feel about your privacy being violated. This is a serious deal here, folks. Know that. And remember that. And don't let Sony win here. DRM is not that important. It stops you from doing what you want to do with your songs. People are not using them maliciously here. There might be a couple of people out there that might be using them maliciously, but most people just want to put their songs on their frickin' iPods. Sony, let them do it. What is so wrong about that? But no, you can only do what people want you to do here. Sony, you're in deep. And if you don't shape up soon, the only thing that's going to happen is you're going to get deeper. Until finally, nobody trusts you anymore. So it's been a really copyright-aimed week so far here in the world of geek. A whole lot of stuff going on. Not a lot of it good. A lot of it's sort of interesting, but not a lot of it good. And I'm going to start things off with a mention. Now, this pretty much flew by the radar. Not many people cared about it. I didn't really care too much about it either. But on the heels of all this DRM information and all that, I felt it would be very interesting to talk about on the show. So, Apple has officially come out and said that they are not going to lend their protection software to Microsoft in order to run iTunes songs on the Xbox 360. Now, one of the main selling points of the Xbox 360 is that it's going to be able to play a whole bunch of media. You'll be able to put a lot of stuff on your Xbox 360 hard drive and be able to use it in a lot of different ways. But the one thing you're not going to be able to do is use iTunes bought songs on your Xbox 360. Microsoft and Apple are not too friendly. And that much is really not going to change anytime soon. I mean, sure, once upon a time, they were kind of cool for a while there, but probably not going to be that way for some time soon. They are competitors, and they will be competitors for a long time to come. And this is just another example of that. Now, a lot of people buy songs on iTunes. Obviously, that is the place to buy your tunes. And a lot of people forget this, but the brand new edition of iTunes, iTunes 6.0, absolutely breaks the software that everybody used to use to remove Apple's protection from your songs. It was able to make those M4Bs into MP3s or whatever format you wanted to put them in. You could put them into Waves, whatever. And that, of course, is JHIM. JHIM was the premier software to do that with for a while. In fact, I'm looking it up right now to see if there's any new information. And no, there is not. As of now, and this is up on the jhimproject.org website, it appears that if you make any purchases using iTunes 6.0, from that point on, you must use 6.0, and then JHIM won't work for you either. JHIM will have to learn how to perform the iTunes 6.0 protocol before this problem is likely to be fixed. So hang on, it could be a bit of a wait. In the meantime, you can wish to delay upgrading to iTunes 6.0 so that you can continue to free your music until a new solution is found. Now, nobody knows how long this is going to take until a solution is found. And until then, everybody who buys their songs off of iTunes is going to be stuck with that encryption. Not much to do here. And there's going to be absolutely no way to get around the fact that Xbox 360 will not be able to play iTunes-bought songs as long as this is the case. And that's probably not going to change anytime soon. Now, mind you, I'm sure they're hard at work. I'm sure the JHIM people are hard at work at trying to break this new algorithm. But from the looks of things, they did a very, very good job of protecting it this time around. It's going to be very hard to break in there and do what you got to do in order to free things up. Will JHIM be able to do it? I don't know. Will the Xbox 360 be able to do it somehow? I don't know. But for now, things are not looking too good for iTunes bought music. Now, I'm sure a lot of people are probably not going to be turning on their Xbox 360 to listen to songs, especially not MP3s, because it's not exactly portable. It's not exactly an iPod here, you know? Xbox 360, sure, it's going to be a little less heavy, well, a lot less heavy than the Xbox was, but it's still a brick, you know? You're obviously not going to be carrying this around and saying, oh, hey, guys, want to listen to this song? Yeah, no, no way. You're going to be using it for games. But still, it's a nice feature to have to be able to listen to your songs, but... Well, your song selection just got a bit more limited, folks, and it doesn't look like it's going to change anytime soon. And if it does, then I will be really surprised because Gates and Jobs, no, that's not a good connection, and it hasn't been for years, and it doesn't look like it's going to change anytime soon. So the used game market in the world is a very, very profitable part of the video game industry. Has been for years. Most people would like to buy a used game when they can, if it's in good condition. And it usually is, mind you. Because most of these stores, GameStop, EB, they keep pretty decent care of their games to make sure that everything stays on the up and up, to make sure that nobody comes back to them complaining, oh, my game is scratched, I can't get past level 2. Because if they got that, then not too many people would be buying their used games. And that much is a problem indeed. But still, used games are a part of the industry. And it doesn't look like that's going to change. Or is it? Well, there's news coming out now that the PlayStation 3, while using Blu-ray discs, might very well have the capabilities of disallowing games to be played on the PlayStation 3 that are used. Now, this isn't saying that it's going to completely stop said games from playing. It's a possibility. The fact that the possibility is there, well, after what I just mentioned about Sony, doesn't make me too hopeful here. The main thing about the situation here is that if you hinder any part of your audience, if you take away any bit of the people who usually come running back to you, it's probably going to bite you in the ass eventually. There are a lot of people out there that play used games. I myself have at least 3 used games at home. I don't have that many games. I have about 18 to 20 PlayStation 2 games at home. You know, I mean, a decent amount, but I mean, not too many. But I do have a few used games there. My Katamari Damacy is used. My Marvel vs. Capcom 2 is used. A couple of games here and there. Now, if I were a poor man, which I am because I'm a college student, and I didn't have a lot of money to spend on games, which I don't because I'm a college student, well, used games are a great opportunity to go out there and still be able to play your games, to be able to get them for $10, $15 less than retail price, get them in pretty good condition, oftentimes even with the booklet that it came with, and the box that it came with. That's a good deal. And it always has been. And with places out there like eBay and Half.com and Amazon Marketplace, where you're able to get your used games for dirt cheap sometimes, it is a great option to have, especially with old games. You know how hard it is to get a new Parasite Eve or Silent Hill or Resident Evil? All those old PlayStation games that everybody's played already and that has long since sold back to the stores. And mind you, with a system like the PlayStation 2 where you're able to play your PlayStation games, it's fun to be able to buy the old games, used or otherwise, usually used, and enjoy the experience. With the PlayStation 3, I'd like to think it's going to be backwards compatible. They're saying it's going to be mostly backwards compatible. And what does that mean? Mostly backwards compatible. That's like I'm mostly feeling good, but I have a fever. You know, I mean, it makes very little sense there. But the important thing is that used games are a part of the culture. They're a part of video games. They are something that video game people turn to when they want to find a cheap game. Don't take this away from them, Sony. You evil, evil corporation, you. All right, maybe they're not that evil, but still, with the whole rootkit thing, they're not on my good side. And especially if they take away the opportunity to play used games on a system, they will not be on my good side either. And mind you, just because a system can do something, just because a disc can do something, doesn't mean it's going to do it. This is just a possibility with the Blu-ray capabilities of a disc. Blu-ray discs are state-of-the-art. They can do a whole bunch of things that other discs before it could not do. Brand new copyright protection going on here. Not going to be nearly as easy to break as DVDs were. And a whole bunch of extra things thrown in there, like being able to stop used. Brand new copyright protection going on here. Not going to be nearly as easy to break as DVDs were. And a whole bunch of extra things thrown in there, like being able to stop used games. And to top it off here, now, if they're going to stop used games, what about used movies? Because if Blu-ray does indeed become the next generation DVD that everybody flocks to, which the industry is very much hoping will be the case, don't you think that people are going to want to be able to rent things like this from Netflix and Blockbuster? And how often do you find a brand new disc at Blockbuster? Yeah, right. You kidding me? These things look like they've been chewed up by the dog 3/4 of the time. They don't take nearly as good protection of these as places like GameStop and EB do with their games. And games from Blockbuster as well. Which is another reason why Blockbuster's numbers are down, but I'm going to get into that on another show about how Netflix is absolutely kicking their butt. But nevertheless, used is there for a reason. You take it away, and you're hurting yourself. And Sony seems to be really good at that lately. Ooh, nice and rocking there. So, on a previous episode of Geek Speak, I believe it was about two or three episodes back, I got into talking about the Zelda 3 prototype that was found online, the NES prototype of a supposed Legends of Zelda 3 that was in production on the Famicom system, otherwise known as the NES, before the SNES was a reality. And people are saying that this later became the basis of the Game Boy version of Zelda, which was Zelda 4. Zelda 3, obviously, was the SNES version that ended up coming out. But this Zelda 3 prototype that was put up on eBay looked like it could have been pretty legit. There was a screenshot out of its opening title screen playing on a television. And you saw the NES on the floor. And it looked like it was pretty legit. But again, you can do anything with Photoshop these days. And it's looking like more and more that the NES Zelda 3 card that was found on eBay is nothing but a cheap prank. Now, the original site that I mentioned about the information on the Zelda 3 prototype, which you can find at ratedo.com, that's ratedo.com/articles/z3proto.html. Once again, I will link to it in the show notes. But this site originally was just about a article about the Zelda 3 NES Proto, which was done a couple of years back. And this guy says that he has the Zelda 3 sample, the Zelda 3 Proto, the original Zelda 3 Proto. And his story looks a bit more legit than the story that was put on eBay. So I'm willing to believe him a little more. And he seems to put a lot of work into this site. But the killer for this eBay cart, the killer for the Zelda 3 that everybody was hoping was real, except for the cynics out there, and mind you, the cynics were kind of right on this, but things started to look a little strange when he started to sell t-shirts from a Cathay Press store that stated, and I quote, yeah, get ready for this. This one's going to be a killer here. The Ringer T says, I was outbid on the Zelda 3 prototype and all I got was this lousy t-shirt. Yeah, that's really, really going to add to your cause there. When you start selling things that make it seem like the people who were bidding on your little Zelda 3 prototype were kind of screwed, yeah, that doesn't really make your cause any happier there. Then the next step in his demise was when he mentioned that Silicon Knights bought his cart. Now, once again, this is straight from the ratedo.com site. Apparently, Silicon Knights, the Canadian gaming company that supposedly bought the eBay cart, emailed Joystick to inform them that Silicon Knights never made a purchase from the guy. Ouch. Here's the email they sent Joystick. We saw your recent posting, wherein you imply that Silicon Knights has purchased Zelda 3, apparently under the name Knight 7. I can affirmatively state that our company, Silicon Knights, has made no such purchase, and we would appreciate your correction of the information on your website to reflect that fact. With respect to the person using the name Knight 7, we are currently investigating whether anyone using that web name is employed by Silicon Knights. Regardless, however, I can confirm right now that no such person was ever authorized by me or anyone else with authority at Silicon Knights to make such a purchase in the company name or otherwise. To the extent that some person is using our trademark company name in an unauthorized manner, we will deal with that directly. In the meantime, we wanted to set the record straight with respect to our corporate activities in view of your article. Please feel free to contact me directly if you have any questions regarding this matter. Sincerely, Dennis Diak, I believe that's how you pronounce it, or Diak, president and founder of Silicon Knights. So that pretty much put a damper on the whole situation there. He said he sold it to Silicon Knights. Silicon Knights said, who the hell are you? That's a problem. Now, the dude who sold the, well, or at least supposedly sold the Zelda 3 cart, then came out with a statement saying, when someone approached me and claimed to be a part of their little group, it seemed legit. They came forth, they seemed to have a lot of background information with the games that Silicon Knight are developing and have developed in the past. Is Knight 7 a member of Silicon Knights? I may never know. Did he sound legit and pay in full right on time? Yes. What more should I need to know? In the letters from Silicon Knights claiming they had made no such purchase from me, is it a cover-up or a greater plan? Was the letter even written by Dennis Diack, or Diack, president and founder, or was it someone posting as him to make me look bad? Was the purchase made by a member of Silicon Knights, but more for personal matters than business-related? Who knows? Who cares? I really shouldn't have to expand on the subject. He flew in from Ontario, he made a swap for cash for cart, and he left clicking his heels. A deal is done. Okay, that is called churning your wheels right there. I mean, that is just literally telling us that you're guilty. Trying to make it seem like that it was not actually the president and founder of Silicon Knights emailing this guy when Joystick got the email straight from him? Yeah, I don't think so. Now, he says that it might have been for personal matters as opposed to business-related. Well, then why didn't the guy say so to begin with? That it was for personal matters. Why did he start talking about Silicon Knights? If that were the case, I would think that they probably would have made that perfectly clear before purchasing it. That, hey, I'm a member of Silicon Knights, but I'm purchasing this for myself. Is that cool? And I'm sure the guy wouldn't have cared because he just wants the cash. And he got the cash, apparently. Or did he? Because we'll never know for sure. Especially considering the fact that he says that he paid in cash and not through PayPal or any sort of thing like that, which is very, very, very conspicuous there. So much hope that I had for the Zelda 3 sample being sold on eBay, the prototype being sold on eBay, is seriously gone now. And I want to thank the owner of RateDough.com for letting everybody know about this, because I didn't want to be left in the dark here. Now, he himself supposedly has a Zelda 3 sample, and he made a much better picture of it, and he actually has a video of him opening up the cart for the first time, and he's going to try and get it working. But who knows? All I know is that the guy on eBay is looking pretty guilty right now. And when people fake having prototypes like this, it really puts a shame on the gaming community in general. Because you want to believe things like this. You want to believe that a lost relic has been found. And when somebody plays on their emotions like this, it just makes everybody look like thieves. And we're not thieves. We're just people. But apparently there's bad people out there as well. And one of them likes to put carts on eBay. So, switching over to the comic side of things, it's dueling comic book moments right now between the two companies. We've got the lovely Marvel side of things, and we've got the DC side of things. In one corner, it's Marvel with the House of M. In the other corner, we've got DC with Infinite Crisis. Now, House of M just wrapped up. The last issue of House of M hit the shelves, surprisingly, right when Infinite Crisis started coming out. The second to last issue came out actually the same week that issue one hit the stands. Obviously trying to take some of the hype off of Infinite Crisis. Was it successful? Yeah, I don't think so. And now Marvel is coming out with a brand new comic book, which I believe is called 182, if I remember correctly. Because the new idea in the Marvel Universe after the end of House of M is that all the mutants have been wiped out except for about 200 mutants. And this is going to go into it. Now, this is right after DC Comics comes out with information on their brand new comic project called 52, which is going to run for 52 issues, one issue a week. That's the selling point. And there are going to be so many great creators involved with this. Grant Morrison, Geoff Johns, Judd Winnick. The list goes on and on. And we got some great artists involved in there as well. On the talent side of things, it's really looking like DC knows what it's doing right now. They've got some of the hottest artists, and they got some of the hottest writers in comics working for their company right now. Marvel, sure, they might have McCone, who used to work on Teen Titans with Geoff Johns. McCone, I believe his first name is Mike, as I looked that up. Now does, yes, Mike McCone. That's it, yeah. Mike McCone used to work for Marvel. He did Exiles with Judd Winnick, and then he went over to DC and did Teen Titans for the first couple of issues with Geoff Johns, and then went back to Marvel. And he's now working on Fantastic Four with J. Michael Straczynski. And I'm liking that run a lot, but I liked him on Teen Titans better. But again, that's just me and a lot of the other people in comics. Now, I'm not going to bash Marvel because I don't like bashing on them because they're the company that I basically got me into comics when I was a youngin'. Like back in junior high, the first issue of comics that I ever picked up was Uncanny X-Men number 300. Why? The shiny cover. Oh yeah. Because back then I thought shiny meant extra special. That's also because I was like 12 at the time. Now I know that shiny cover means marketing gimmick. Silly Marvel. Silly everybody else too. Hey, this one's a chromium cover. That means it's uber special. Yeah, right. But anyway, they're dueling right now. They're trying to get as much publicity for each of their events as possible. Now, I'm going to spoil something here in Infinite Crisis that I'm sure those of you who have been following Infinite Crisis probably know by now, because issue 2 has already come out, and I'm about to mention something about issue 1. For those of you who do not want to get spoiled on Infinite Crisis and are possibly waiting for the entire thing to be out until you read it, you might want to just fast forward here. Now, the biggest thing about Infinite Crisis is that in Infinite Crisis number 1, get ready for this, Earth 2 Superman, the Superman that was pretty much null and void in the DC Universe, comes back. That's the main thing. Alexander Luthor, Earth 2 Lois Lane, Earth 2 Superman, and Earth Prime Superboy are back. The cast-offs of Crisis on Infinite Earths are all back. Everyone who survived, everyone that you had not seen since 1986 in comic books, back in the fold, trying to make things right in this one universe. Now, I think that's an excellent idea. I think that bringing these characters back now, excellent move. Because it was about time for a new Crisis. It really was. And DC's doing it pretty well. Over on Marvel, House of M, now, the main difference here is that while DC had a bunch of creators involved, all Marvel has is Brian Michael Bendis right now. At least on the big event side of things. They've got Brian Michael Bendis doing this entire thing. That's House of M. That's him. With Infinite Crisis, you've got Judd Winnick. You've got Greg Rucka, he writes Wonder Woman, and he wrote, I believe he wrote Omek, if I remember correctly. Yeah, he did write Omek, if I remember correctly. And he does a couple of other things with the company, and he was also involved with the planning of Infinite Crisis. Jeff Loeb, back when he was with the company, also helped out a little bit. Now he's with Marvel, so things are a little different. But you've got some of the best creators in comics all involved getting together this beautiful script for Infinite Crisis. And all Marvel has is one person on their side, Brian Michael Bendis. And the rest of their books, while they tried to get themselves involved with House of M, they all had their nice little miniseries there and didn't really do too much in the long run. I mean, a lot of people really didn't end up talking too much about the miniseries here because they really didn't add to the plot too much. They were side stories. The miniseries in Infinite Crisis lead up to Infinite Crisis. You've got Ranthanagar War. You've got Omek Project. You've got Villains United. And you've got Day of Judgment. All of those integral to the plot of Infinite Crisis. And they all came out before Infinite Crisis hit the stands. They were the prelude to Infinite Crisis. There was even a prelude to Infinite Crisis one-shot that led up to Infinite Crisis. And with Marvel, you had House of M, and you had at the exact same time all of these House of M specials coming out. And it didn't really add too much to it. So while I do validate what's happening in House of M, I also am not too excited about it. Because it's just not nearly as exciting as some of the stuff that DC is putting out. So right now, you can put me in the camp of DC zombie after years of being a Marvel zombie. What are you guys going to choose? Well, I guess that's all up to your preference, but anybody who wants to add to the debate, you know where to find me, speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. It's time for the wind-up here on Geek Speak, where I switch gears from the geek side of things over to the sports side of things. And there's only one thing I could talk about this week, and that, of course, is T.O. Well, T.O. got a T.O. Terrell Owens got a giant timeout in the form of not playing for the rest of the year. Yeah, Terrell Owens opened up his big mouth. What else is new? Terrell Owens, of course, of the Philadelphia Eagles, and basically ragged on their quarterback, Donovan McNabb. Said that if they had a quarterback like Brett Favre, then maybe they'd be playing better. Well, the team didn't take too much to this. Yeah, they didn't like it a lot. They didn't like it at all. And I'm not too surprised, because if I was that team, I wouldn't be liking it too much either. You cannot go out and make such comments about the quarterback of a team. The quarterback is the key to survival in sports, in football. Without a quarterback, you are dead in the water. Example, the Jets. They lost Chad Pennington, and they were out for the year. That's it. Their year was done. Once they went out and fished out for Testaverde, you knew everything was done. And Donovan McNabb is a very, very good quarterback. Always has been. And yet, he got written off by T.O., Terrell Owens, his own teammate. That is just not cool. Never has been, never will be. You cannot do that to a teammate. Terrell Owens is going to suffer for that. And he already is. Terrell Owens, you made the biggest mistake of your career. You're no longer a Philadelphia Eagle. Suspended for 4 games and then is going to be put on probation after that to the point where he will not play for the rest of the year. Anybody else going to pick him up? Honestly, if I'm the rest of the league, I would have to go no on that. Because you've seen what he's done with every team he's been on so far. He starts off strong and then ends up saying something stupid to ruin it all. And he did that again. Terrell Owens, do the world a favor. keep your mouth shut. Here's the windup. Here's the pitch. Every single Monday from 2 to 3 here on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org, you can find the Sporting Goods. Web stream's back up, so you'll actually be able to listen to it. And you'll have the lovely and talented Ian Levenstein, Jason Green, Joey, David, and anybody else who decides to drop in talking sports on a regular basis every Monday. The email address here at GeekSpeak is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. Once again, we will be changing websites for GeekSpeak, so you'll be able to find this week's episode at the usual spot at geekspeak.typepad.com, but it will also be available at the brand new website at speakgeekspeak.com. The forum will be up at speakgeekspeak.com/forums sometime this upcoming week. Might even be up as early as this night if I get it fixed soon enough. And I'm pretty sure I know what to do in that, so it probably will end up tonight. So anybody who wants to head over to the forums and make some posts and make yourself known, I'll be more than happy to hear you. You can vote for GeekSpeak at Podcast Alley. There is a link both at the new site and the old site to do that. And of course, thank you so much for listening. My feed burner is now officially up to about 63 or 64 people listening to the podcast, and that's a good start. Once you outgrow a website, you know that you're on a good route, and that's what I'm feeling right now. I'm feeling the love. Thank you guys so much for listening, and I will be more than happy to continue putting out the product as long as I have myself some listeners. So once again, I am Ian Levenstein, and this has been GeekSpeak Episode 8. Have a good week. Enjoy your geek. I'll see you guys next week. Take care, everybody. It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.